Hi, my name is Sarah Tran.
And this is Megha Jan.
And we
are Technology. Today is Tuesday, August 11th, 2020. And we're here to discuss the recent congressional hearing that called upon four of the largest tech companies on the entire planet. It took place on July 29th of this year, just your typical Wednesday. And these four tech companies were called to testify in front of Congress, specifically the House Judiciary Committee and the Antitrust Subcommittee. Now, the original hearing was actually scheduled to be that Monday, but it ended up being delayed because of the death of Representative John Lewis. So we'd just like to address that, you know, pay our respects to Rep. John Lewis. And thankfully, the four tech CEOs did that during their hearing as well.
And to provide more context on the situation, the main stakeholders involved are Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Apple. And sometimes people refer to these as GAFA or G-A-F-A. Specifically, these big four tech giants were called before the House Judiciary Committee because they were thought to be in violation of antitrust laws.
We're going to throw around the word antitrust quite a lot in the upcoming episode. So before we start doing that, Sarah, what exactly are antitrust laws?
So back in 1880, the U.S. Congress passed a series of laws to actually help promote and foster competition in the U.S. And so the goals of these antitrust laws are to essentially prevent monopolies from ultimately taking over too much of a share of a particular industry, and therefore not allowing competition to occur, which can ultimately stump the core American values we have, for example, of having a thriving entrepreneurship ecosystem and just allowing the free market to run on its own without too much monopoly from an external force. I guess why they're really particularly important for us as consumers is that if you don't have these antitrust laws in place and you have monopolies, we as consumers have less options. We can't really go through the free market and make choices for ourselves.
I think that was really eloquently put. And yeah, I mean, if you are a consumer, just like we are, you want as many choices as possible. You know, it gives you more power as a consumer as well to say, if this service isn't working out for me, or I just don't like it, I can make a switch. So that's essentially why antitrust laws exist in the first place. But yeah, I mean, a lot of people I noticed on Twitter were asking stuff like, where was Microsoft? And I think that's a really valid question that people have put out there. Personally, like from what I've read and what I have seen, I think that the reason Microsoft may not have been there, despite the fact that they have been the center of many antitrust conversations in the past, and you know, the Department of Justice did sue them back in 1998 for antitrust violations, I think the reason they weren't there at this particular hearing was because they've transitioned away from consumer tech over the past few decades. And, you know, when you look at Office 365 and that whole, you know, suite, you can see that it's not necessarily meant for one individual to be using. They're more in the corporate sphere. So that means that there's less concerns of consumer privacy and antitrust violations. I guess that's like a quick explanation of why Microsoft may not have been there, but it's time to get down to the details.
This particular instance is just so important that even the Congress understood this, and those in the hearings involved really understood this. So for some logistical information, this entire hearing was a whopping 6.5 hours long. So just imagine your longest Zoom call and multiply it by, you know, a couple numbers, and then just pretend like that's on Cisco's WebEx platform. To describe the overview of this, because before we even get into the details, it's important to know what exactly went down and how it went down. To begin, each of the CEOs of the respective tech companies started off with giving a 5-minute opening commentary to really just offer their defenses and to sort of play to that emotional rhetoric. Bezos and Pichet mention their humble beginnings, sort of talking about how they have grown over time and how really these industries have transformed so much within the last decade. It's pretty incredible. On the other hand, Cook and Zuckerberg were talking about how both Apple and Facebook respectively were uniquely American companies and that they really did stand for American values. And so on that note, could you start us off and tell us more about what went down with Google?
Yeah, so getting into the details about the Google trial or the Google testimony, it's pretty important because Google was there for a big reason. The Department of Justice is actually investigating Google's massive digital advertising business, which, by the way, they make annually $160 billion from. And they're actually expected to file a lawsuit against Google by the end of this summer. So this hearing was extremely important in trying to determine Google's role in consumers' lives, as well as their goal in the competitive sphere of the tech industry. But yeah, I mean, Google wields a lot of power over all of us because they process 90% of all online searches in the United States. That's a pretty large amount of all the information we are searching for on a daily basis. And so considering all of that, basically the main issue brought forward by the Congress members on both committees was essentially that Google has been known for kind of creating this environment where a user stays on the Google interface. And that is taking away from the traffic on other websites. So Chairman Cicilline specifically said, "Our documents show that Google evolved from a turnstile to the rest of the web to a walled garden that increasingly keeps users within its sites." That is such a loaded statement, but let's break that down just a little bit. So let's say you're just a normal consumer looking for a place to eat near you. And, you know, we've all been in this situation. We do a quick Google search for restaurants near me and a few options pop up. And, you know, 10 years ago, both you, you the listener and I, we probably would have just like been redirected to Yelp through Google. And we would have seen the ratings for these restaurants on Yelp. But that doesn't happen anymore. If you guys are anything like me, you probably stay on Google itself. And you basically end just looking at Google ratings. And Google also has, you know, the amount of traffic that a certain restaurant has at different times. And I find that information very useful. So looking at a combination of those features, I end up staying on Google's interface, even though this should have been a process that may have extended to some other websites and platforms as well. So of course, Yelp and Google have had very heated discussions about this in the past. Chairman Cicilline brought that up when he questioned Google's CEO, Sundar Pichai, as well. But I feel like the way he was questioning was very accusatory. And rather than understanding how Google's technology works and how such situations can be prevented, he kind of went after the why, and he was saying, why are you diverting traffic from other mobile platforms? Why are you stealing content from other apps and platforms? That was his exact wording. And, you know, I think that maybe the line of questioning could have been changed a little to be a little more productive and really understand how Google works, how their black box algorithm functions, which of course is based off of machine learning. So Google engineers themselves don't exactly understand what is going on there, but maybe they could have like learned a little more about how exactly these search results are produced, what patterns Google has noticed that may yield some biases in their search results and the information that they're giving their users or collecting from their users. And I feel like they kind of missed out on getting to that point.
And I really love that distinction you made between how a lot of the questions were about the why, as opposed to being more productive and asking about the how, and to really just be more transparent, to foster that dialogue that I think is really important in the 21st century. To talk more about something I think that's very similar with Google and Amazon, which is the next big tech company I'm going to talk about, is how both of the CEOs started off their 5-minute commentary in the beginning, really just talking about their humble beginnings. On that note of their humble beginnings, This is a fun fact. This is actually Bezos's first congressional hearing. So to sort of go more into that, one of the biggest concerns that was raised for Amazon is how Amazon is primarily built off of third-party data from anywhere ranging from small businesses, outsourcing, and all the way to advertising, which, just like Google, makes up a large percentage of Amazon's revenue. One of the main things that was brought to Amazon's attention was that potentially Amazon may not treat all third-party sellers in an equitable manner. So Representative Pramila Jayapal first posed this question to Bezos about a Wall Street Journal report saying that Amazon had mined third-party sellers' data to essentially develop and launch its own competing products. To directly quote her, Jayapal asked, "Does Amazon ever access or use third-party seller data when making business decisions?" To which Bezos responded, quote, "I can't answer that question yes or no. What I can tell you is we have a policy against using seller-specific data to aid our private label business, but I can't guarantee that policy has never been violated." And so Bezos goes to make sure to preface this and notes that this report essentially is still under investigation. And it kind of reveals something that I think is going to be a theme throughout these four tech companies, that there is sort of this gray zone. There's a lot of things that are left to be investigated. And so on that note, aside from the data violations, another point that was brought up about Amazon was in regards to its monopoly of the global retail market, and more specifically with Amazon's potential to restrict certain sellers. So what does this mean? Well, for example, Representative Lucy McBath quoted a story. So this is a very popular story about a small business bookstore on Amazon who essentially alleges that Amazon has systematically blocked us, so that's a direct quote, from selling entire categories of books. And Bezos responded that it wasn't necessarily consistent with Amazon's policies. And so I guess the main thing here that was brought to the attention of the court, and something that some people in terms of their commentary have been saying, is that these sort of inconsistencies and inequities could be more than just a one-time thing. They could be a legitimate pattern.
I think what you said about, you know, there being a pattern consistently of these behaviors in the past was an overarching theme throughout the testimonies of a lot of these big tech companies. Congress has found patterns in their behavior over the past few years, and that's why they were brought here. And I think that perfectly transitions into talking about Facebook, because this was not Facebook's, it was not Mark Zuckerberg's first time being at a congressional hearing, given he was here only a few years ago to discuss Cambridge Analytica and Facebook's involvement in the 2016 election. So he seemed to know what was going on. He had a gist of what congressional hearings are like already. And he started off the opening statement really confidently. He threw a little shade at Apple and Google because he was talking about the competition that Facebook faces. And he started off by saying that there are other apps and other companies that serve as, quote, gatekeepers, unquote, to, you know, the rest of the world. And whether Facebook even gets to its users or not entirely depends on the actions of these gatekeepers. So that kind of set up some really powerful imagery for these gatekeepers being much more powerful than Facebook itself. And then he also started talking about the other competition that they face. He talked about how iMessage is the main messaging platform, and it's not Facebook's own messenger. Then he talked about how Amazon is the fastest growing ads platform, and Google is the largest platform for ads, which I thought was really interesting because Facebook, a majority of their revenue stream is derived from advertisements. So this was a really interesting thing to mention. Like, even though they are heavily reliant on ads, unlike a lot of other tech companies, they're still not necessarily considered number one in that department. So that really just set up the scene for what was to come later on. But why was the reason that Facebook was here in the first place? Well, they were called because The House Judiciary Committee and the Antitrust Subcommittee found some suspicious patterns in Facebook's behavior over the past few years in regards to copying the products of their competitors, such as Instagram and Snapchat, while simultaneously trying to acquire their competitors. So basically, Representative Premila Jayapal was the person questioning Mark Zuckerberg a majority of the time, and she pursued a very specific line of questioning. She pulled up documents from this year-long investigation that her antitrust subcommittee had conducted, and it revealed a lot about how Instagram CEO Kevin Systrom and Snapchat CEO Evan Spiegel felt about the interactions that they had with Mark Zuckerberg and Facebook. And according to them, they felt like it was really hostile because they claimed that Facebook had threatened them with copying their features in order to acquire both of these companies. So what exactly do I mean by acquiring features? I think we can like look at a few examples currently on Facebook. If you look at, you know, Facebook stories, that was a function that didn't really exist on there a few years ago, but they closely emulate what we see on Snapchat, that format of like posting a photo on your story and then it disappears 24 hours later. You can personalize it with stickers and emojis and text and whatnot. That is something Facebook only started having much later, after Snapchat had already established themselves as the main player in that game. And then recently, we've seen that there are Instagram Reels now. As you guys know, Instagram was acquired by Facebook quite a few years ago. So now we see that there are these things called Instagram Reels, which are really, really short videos that seem to mirror what TikTok has in terms of their format for videos. So that was really interesting to see. Of course, Congress found this behavior really suspicious, and they found these features really suspicious, and that's what the questioning was about. But what was particularly interesting was the statements that Premila Jayapal read aloud from conversations that Kevin Systrom, the CEO of Instagram, had with one of his investors before Facebook acquired them. And in this conversation, Kevin Systrom actually described Mark Zuckerberg as, quote, going into destroy mode, unquote, if Kevin Systrom, you know, failed to let Facebook acquire his company. And so there was kind of this environment being built where it seemed like Snapchat and Instagram and any of Facebook's competition really felt super threatened by the company. And as Premila Jayapal and her colleagues describe this, that is anti-competitive behavior. So I think the takeaway is that Mark Zuckerberg was trying to create this picture of, you know, there being a lot of competition that they're facing in multiple different departments. But what these Congress people were trying to bring up was that, you know, a lot of these areas that Facebook exists in is solely because they have taken from their competition.
Yeah, and I think the symbolic imagery that you describe for that one word of gatekeepers, was something that could really extend to pretty much all of these tech companies. And especially, I know it was brought up a lot in regards to Apple. And so Tim Cook, the main thing that he was really pressured on was whether the App Store treats all developers equally. And so Representative Val Butler Demings began to ask Cook about how Apple has this sort of this history or some of these allegations of removing these third-party parental control apps that used MDM, so mobile device management technology. To give sort of an example of what this looked like in the past, Cook actually refuted some of these claims. Basically, when the Screen Time software was launched in 2018, which is a useful tool that enables users to track which apps they use the most and essentially place limitations on their app usage from there. Actually, in the following weeks when Screen Time was released, 11 of the 17 most downloaded Screen Time and parental control apps were removed and restricted, according to a 2019 New York Times report. In response, Cook's defense was that these competitors were only removed over safety concerns. And I think that brings up a really good question, ultimately, because there really is a good argument to say that for these apps, you know, these third-party apps that are acquiring a lot of user data, they're watching the way that you scroll through your feed. They're looking at how long you're spending on one app or how long you're spending on Spotify to listen to, you know, the technology podcast, of course. And with that data, I don't think we as everyday consumers realize that data and just being able to monitor your screen 24/7, because that's essentially what these technologies allow, is that there's a lot of room for it to get into the wrong hands or to be sold to a third party. And so I think that really was what Cook's defense was in his main argument. However, there is this perspective on the other side, of course, that, you know, in many ways, this could exemplify antitrust behavior and really warrant those antitrust laws in this hearing as a whole, because when such a big tech giant as Apple and the App Store, like just to put your shoes in the perspective of an app developer, for example, let's say you're building, you know, the next parental control feature, and then you work so long on it, you spend like an entire year in beta, and then next thing you know, the App Store just sends you like this email and it's like, congratulations, your app has been rejected, right? And that type of thing, I could totally see where the point of contention is and really why there is sort of this gray zone. It doesn't seem to be much of a black and white. There's no clear answer in this case. But sort of on that note, it seemed that ultimately Cook has defended Apple's actions throughout the hearings because of Apple's utmost priority to the consumer and protecting our data and privacy.
Yeah, that last thing you said about, you know, having those values of protecting the consumer kind of ties into what all of these opening statements kept reiterating and what all of these testimonies kept reiterating. And that was, we are just building, you know, the best products for our consumers. We are just serving our users. They really like our products. They trust us. And that is why we are one of the best and the biggest. And I think that was being used to kind of justify why, or not necessarily completely justify why there may not be that much competition in the arena or why their competition may not compare to them. But it was at least showing that these companies have contributed quite a lot to, you know, the American success story and America's GDP as a whole. So yeah, I think that was like a recurring theme throughout these hearings. But that being said, I think the biggest takeaway was that government regulation might become a more normal part of big tech. And I think that, you know, we were both pleased to see that Congress is taking a more active role in understanding technology, understanding how users could possibly be hurt by technology if their, you know, data gets into the wrong hands. And I think that's a really important conversation to be having. I wish that they had that conversation even sooner. But yeah, on the other hand, I also think that when it comes to the power that these companies yield, I mean, if you look at, you know, Mark Zuckerberg when he was starting Facebook out of his Harvard dorm, and when Jeff Bezos was just building an online bookstore, I don't think any of them ever anticipated their companies becoming so big and any of them going so far. And I think the power that they now have is just so much that oftentimes it's really, really hard to micromanage things. And it's really, really hard to discover threats before they become too big. And it's, you know, difficult to understand what may be the next biggest threat, just because we are in unprecedented territory. And, you know, it's really, really hard to know what may come next in the world of big tech and consumer privacy.
I love this point you made about how important this conversation is, one, first of all, to be having, And second of all, how Congress is increasingly putting a stake and a larger focus on what's going on in the tech industry and the tech sector as a whole. And then I also want to further that, just take it one step further and say that this is a really important sort of ignition point that is not only going to start sort of the technological literacy and education for Congress members, but I also hope that it inspires this dialogue around how consumers are being educated around technology. For example, I know earlier you mentioned with Google and sort of how they exactly run their algorithms and complex machine learning models. Like, if we as consumers could have more insight into really knowing what's going on behind the curtain, right? If you just pull that back, I think that would sort of be such a great moment in history. This 6.5 hour hearing would not, you know, it wouldn't just be something that was recorded in history textbooks, but it's something that I think will be just the beginning point of a new era of transparency and accountability for these big tech companies.
Yeah, I really loved that point that you made. It is time that, you know, all of these tech companies, as amazing as they are and as amazing as the products that we use from them are, it's really important that they do be held accountable and that there is more transparency, as you were saying, in the entire process of how their products work and how we can benefit from them and how we can even be harmed from them. So I think that overall, there might be more hearings like this in the future. I do not expect this to be the end. And you know, there might even be a lot of good that results from that. Yeah. So that being said, I think we should quickly touch on how COVID-19 impacted this whole situation, because personally, I found it kind of, there were hilarious moments as well, you know. For example, there was this moment where Jeff Bezos, the richest man on the planet, who runs this huge tech company, had his mic off. And one of the representatives actually had to say, Mr. Bezos, I believe you're on mute. And I thought that was just so iconic.
Right. And I'm so glad you brought that. That was one of the best highlight moments. You know, COVID-19 has been transforming the way we fundamentally interact with each other, the way we use technology and the purpose behind technology, of course. And so I know that there are probably some other perspectives on this, but and I'm super interested to hear yours, actually, because I think we have some different perspectives on this. But I actually think that COVID-19 and this entire pandemic has shifted the way that we interact as a society so much that it has put so much more emphasis on these type of hearings and these type of trials, because we no longer live in a world where we can just knock on our neighbor's door and talk to them and have that face-to-face conversation, but rather there is sort of this, you know, you can interpret it as a barrier or just sort of a gateway or a bridge that really is technology. And technology is how we communicate. It's actually how the way that Mega and I are recording this podcast. It's, you know, it's through technology. And so I think if anything, COVID-19 has put so much more of an emphasis and so much more even stress on these lawmakers and, you know, people as part of the congressional committee to really get to the bottom of these important questions that they're asking. So on that note, I want to hear your perspective on this, Mega.
Yeah, I think to a certain extent, you are completely correct. You know, it was really strange to see all of them using, you know, Cisco's WebEx platform to run this meeting. There being technical issues in a meeting with four of the largest tech giants on the planet. And yeah, like this pandemic has understandably completely altered the way we interact with each other. And so this trial was also very different. And the lawmakers do have this pressure on them. And I think the reason that this hearing was held, part of the reason that it was pushed to be held this summer, despite everything, was because of that intense pressure. So while there is a pressure on both sides, you know, with these technologies becoming more important than ever, so the CEOs and the tech giants having to deal with more traffic than ever on their platforms and more demand, and the lawmakers trying to get down and ask these really, really important questions, I think there's also just a moment to learn for all of us from this experience and to understand why technology is more important than ever and why consumer tech specifically needs to be understood properly by all of us, and there needs to be proper regulation and transparency. So I understand that there is pressure. I also think that the trial probably would have been more intense had we not been in a pandemic, because keep in mind, these CEOs didn't have to walk in with paparazzi, you know, right in their faces and people protesting and yelling things at them. So I think that was maybe one positive that emerged from this. They were more relaxed and we were able to get more coherent responses. But yeah, I mean, I think that there are two sides to that coin. There are understandably a lot of negatives that emerged from the pandemic. And then there's just a lot of understanding and growth that we've seen from it too.
Yeah, and on that note of growth, I think some of the biggest takeaways and implications from this hearing is that these structured hearings, you know, that were initially starting or beginning with these big tech four giants, I really don't think it's going to stop here. Where it's going to go is it's going to, first of all, move from GAFA, so Google, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, to, you know, potentially Microsoft very soon, just because Microsoft is considered one of the really big tech companies, especially with, you know, some of the things we're going to be talking about in future episodes, where Microsoft has acquired LinkedIn, GitHub, and there's a very high or likely possibility of acquiring TikTok or ByteDance. So Mega, could you maybe tell us more about what's going to happen next and what our viewers should stay tuned for?
Yes. So first of all, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in today. Our next episode, which will be next Tuesday on August 18th, we'll discuss the possibility of the TikTok or ByteDance acquisition by Microsoft, which is currently set for mid-September. And we're actually going to be interviewing people from multiple different age groups and multiple different professional backgrounds to see what they think of this acquisition and what their personal views on TikTok and data privacy are. So with that, thank you so much for tuning in, everyone. Have a great week ahead, and we'll see you next week to spill some more tea.